Hello and welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're broadcasting, sadly, this week from the Duke Brothers Securities Firm here at Car Talk Plaza.
Yes, it is with great sadness that we mourn the passing of the inventor of the telephone, Alexander Graham Bell, also known as my pal Don Amici, and Mortimer Duke. Was it Mortimer? Was
I don't
he
know.
Mortimer? He was one of the Duke brothers. I mean, one of the greatest movies that reflected, at least in my opinion, man's real deepest feelings toward his brother.
Yes.
Don Amici said it all. He was pretty good, though. He was a great guy.
He was.
He wasn't all that old, just in the mere 80s.
Yeah, I think about 80.
82, 83, 84.
Like that. About your age, right?
About my age. What a great man, though. A great man. It is sad that he is gone, but some of us go and some of us stay.
Yes.
And isn't it strange which ones are elected to stay? It's hard to know whether staying is better than going. We don't know that.
We don't.
We don't know that.
No, we
We know that staying is good. Oh, well.
I see a pile of letters before you.
I do have a pile of letters, most of which have to do with the raging controversy regarding the Puzzler. Is it fair game to discuss the Puzzler? It's this early in the show? Why not?
Yeah, this is the Puzzler, but which was the most popular city or town name in the United States.
What is the city or town which occurs most frequently in these here United States? And, of course, we gave an answer, which, as always, was wrong. No, I mean, it's not clear that it's wrong, but I have got here a letter.
We researched the dickens out of this.
We did. I mean, we did research the dickens out of it, and there's always an expert. I mean, there's a letter here from someone who certainly sounds like he knows what he's talking about more than we do.
People that listen to our show know that you can't be fooled by that.
Well, wait a minute now. This guy is from the Department of Geography at Virginia Tech, Virginia Polytechnical Institute and State University. Professor, Herr Dr. Professor Lawrence Karstensen.
Mm-hmm.
Get this. Mm. This week's puzzle. By the way, he wrote this before he heard us give our answer. So he was just answering the Puzzler. He doesn't know that he's telling us that we're jerks.
No, that'll be next week's letter.
This week's puzzle was especially interesting to me because as a professional geographer, and professor of geographic information systems. Isn't this going to hurt?
I'm going to stick to my area.
I had a tool to use to do the timely research you needed concerning this important topic. Talks like a professor, doesn't he?
He does.
I have enclosed my results that show that the winner with 190 occurrences within all 50 states.
Yes.
Is Midway.
Midway,
oh, my
huh?
God.
Really?
I thought you'd also be interested in knowing that Springfield had 48 occurrences. These data came from the U.S. Board of Geographic Names, the United States Board of Geographic Names, and the U.S. Geological Survey's Geographic Names Information System, GNIS. They love those acronyms. A file commonly used in building digital geographic database.
Mm.
Oh, although it hesitates,
but that sounds convincing, doesn't it?
The file contains nearly 130,000 populated places in the U.S., though I would hesitate to call all these places towns or cities. Midway is a clear winner.
Yeah, well, if they're not towns or cities, then, yeah, I mean, what is he? Midway Avenue?
They have a name.
Well, yeah.
Hey,
what? Midway Mall?
Congratulations on a wonderful puzzler and on giving us 2 whole weeks to ponder it. Though you missed National Geographic Awareness Week, and we did, that was November 15th to 19th.
I didn't miss it.
I'm glad you are doing your part to illustrate the importance of our field to the motoring public. Interestingly, it shows that second is Fairview.
So we missed by one.
We missed by
one. Oh, big deal, right? if you'd like to call us about your car, the number is 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Janice.
Where are you from, Janice?
Greenville, North Carolina.
You know, there is a Greenville in
there's a Greenville everywhere.
I've never been to a Midway any place. Have you?
No. Have you, Janice? You ever heard
I've been to a Midway?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Midway what?
North Carolina.
Of course. We know there's one in North Carolina. There's one everywhere.
Yeah, there's, no, the one, there's going to be three everywhere. How many of them were there? 200?
Again, it boggles the mind that a state can't think of another name that they have to rename.
Well, you know why I figured out? Because a lot of the towns were named independently before there were... Before there was
databases. Yeah. Before there were databases. I mean, if you're sitting around...
Cross-referencing.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in the northeast corner of some state and you decide to name your town, you don't know what's going on in the southwest corner, so you name it Midway. No, it must all be in the middle because there must be Midway between... I don't get it.
What's up, Janice?
Well, let's see. I have a 1986 Subaru GL10.
Uh-huh.
And go out in the morning and start the car, and it's like... really, really sluggish. Those RPMs are going crazy. And the ECS light comes on, and sometimes it makes like a buzzer kind of sound, like kind of sound. And so what I do is I turn off the car, start it up again, and it's a little bit better, but the ECS light is still on.
Uh-huh.
And it stays on. And so I'll drive around, go to a store here and there, and then go to the store, come out, and then the ECS light is not on anymore. It's fine.
Okay.
Most of the time it does it in the morning, but it does it other times.
And while you're bopping around town, is the car running poorly or is it running okay?
It's okay, I guess.
How long does it run poorly every morning?
How long does it run poorly? When I first started, you mean?
Yeah.
About 10 or 15 seconds, because I turned it off. Because I found out that...
And so when you restart it, it runs well, but the light is on.
The ECS light is on.
Have you had this to your Subaru dealer to have them look at it?
And
no.
We didn't bring it to the Subaru dealer, but we brought it to a mechanic, and they say they can't find anything wrong with it.
Well, because they don't know how to look. They have to look up the trouble codes. Under the dashboard is a little box that has a flashing light on it.
Uh-huh.
And it'll flash the codes. It'll tell them what that ECS light means. In other words, the ECS light is merely telling you that there's a trouble code stored in the computer.
Okay.
And if they look under the dash and watch the flashing lights, it'll flash a number.
Uh-huh.
You know, the number's encoded, you know, two
beep,
flashes
beep.
And then
beep,
three
beep.
Flashes means a code 23.
Beep, 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 beep.
Then they go to their little guidebook. They look up in their Subaru book and it tells you what a code 23 is, if there is a code 23. I don't even know if there is for Subaru.
By the way, ECS stands for Engine Condition Sad.
Engine Control System. Or engine condition sad in your case, and they'll look it up and they'll find out what's wrong, and who knows what's wrong with it. I don't know. I mean, there could be a lot of things affecting it. This car is fuel injected.
Yeah.
And it could be saying that there's something wrong with one of the sensors, like the coolant temp sensor, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And that ECS light will tell you which one of the components is bad and sending that signal to the computer, and it goes out after a while because the condition must clear up, and that's why the car also begins to run well. So if you took it to these guys and they didn't know what to look for, maybe they didn't know about the flashing lights. Ask them if they checked it for codes.
Ask him if they checked it for codes.
Yeah, and if he checked it for code and didn't get one, what it means is that you're going to have to leave it overnight some night.
So that when it's running badly and the light is on, then he'll get the code because it only happens early in the morning.
Oh, okay.
But you should fix it.
But I should fix it.
Yeah.
It's worth fixing.
Well, it probably isn't, but, you know, you got to keep...
Is it worth fixing?
No, it is worth fixing.
Oh, okay.
You've got to keep America at work, you know.
Oh, yeah?
It's important. It's important.
Okay.
But get it looked at. It's probably something simple.
Not America. More importantly, mechanics.
Yes.
Got to keep mechanics
at work, and you got to get those boat payments made because we don't want any foreclosures on boats.
So
Thank you for calling, Janice.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
See you. Bye-bye.
Hey, we've got more calls in the Puzzler Answer coming up right after this.
This message comes from NPR sponsor eBay Motors. We all know that feeling of finding yourself stuck on the side of the road, but now you can avoid that pain by getting your vehicle the parts it needs before that breakdown, oh no, moment. With eBay Guaranteed Fit and over 122 million parts and accessories, you can make sure your ride stays running smoothly. Just look for the green check. Get the right parts, the right fit, and the right prices. ebaymotors.com. Let's ride. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, guess what? It is time to answer last week's puzzler.
I just did. Fairview.
No.
Midway.
That was Midway?
I mean, do you... Midway? All right.
I don't know.
Who is this guy? You can't trust college professors.
We know
that. He's got credentials, though.
Yeah, don't let that fool you either. Anyway, to get to the important issue at hand, yes. This week's Puzzler was adapted from a Puzzler sent in to us by a guy named Jeff Raskin. And the rules are, if we use your Puzzler and you catch us, we'll send you a Car Talk t-shirt or a baseball hat. So if you know Jeff, don't tell him we use this Puzzler. Whatever.
Right.
Anyway, here it is. Some years ago, one of my kids was in the Cub Scouts or Boy Scouts. I don't remember. Reform school, and they had a big rally at one of the Air Force bases that also had adjacent to it a civilian airfield of some kind.
Yes, I know exactly the place.
Yeah. In one of these hangars, there are some small propeller-driven planes, like civilians, they don't have civilian jets.
Well, they do. Sure.
Yeah.
Those little Lear jets, those are civilian jets.
Yes,
yeah.
I suppose.
These were prop planes.
But the average citizen would own a prop plane.
Prop planes.
And I noticed that there's a spinner, you know, this cone-shaped thing right in the middle of the propeller, right?
Sure.
Cone-shaped thing that goes over the nut that holds the propeller onto the crankshaft of the engine.
Yeah.
And I noticed that some of them are chrome-plated, you know, like bathroom fixtures, and some of them are painted. So anyway, we're there looking at these things, and I say, gee, that's interesting. Some of them are painted, and some of them aren't, and some of them are chrome-plated, and my son says, yeah, if you were such a knucklehead, Dad, you'd know why. Well, he knew. And I didn't.
You would know why some of them are chrome plated and some of them aren't. That was the question.
Exactly. And thanks to Jeff Raskin.
Don't mention his name again.
I now know the answer.
T-shirts to give away.
My son refused to tell me, but Jeff wrote in and mentioned this, and I said, ah. I remember. You will notice the next time you look. And again, I'm taking Raskin's word for this because I don't have any authoritative information on this except...
And you don't have any flight experience?
I do not have any flight experience.
Hmm.
No. That you will see on single-engine planes...
You have flights of fancy, do you not?
They can be either chrome-plated or they can be painted on a single-engine plane. But if you see a twin-engine plane with a engine on each of the wings... Be interesting to have both engines on one wing. Make for some interesting flight.
Well, you fly sideways.
So landings are tough.
Landings are tough, right. Well, you could put a wheel down at the other end of that wing.
I'm glad you brought that up because the wheel is the important piece here.
The wheel is the important piece. And that's what your brilliant son, it was Lewis.
I believe so.
Right.
The chrome-plated spinners allow the pilot to look into them and use them as a mirror to see if he's got landing gear.
And therefore, the chrome-plated ones are only on the double-engine planes.
Well, you'll never see... No, that's not true. You'll see a chrome-plated one on a single-engine plane, but it's useless. It's merely decorative.
Ah.
But on a
double-engine.
Right.
Then you always see chrome, because presumably you can look in this thing and see the landing gear?
Yeah, or anything else. People parachuting out the cargo bay. Anything else you might want to see.
No kidding.
You can see the underbelly of the plane. Don't forget, you're sitting in the cockpit... The engines are behind you, and the wheels are
underneath you.
So
there's the engines. You look in the thing, and you can see. I guess that's right. I mean,
just like all the other theories about how to break in your engine, sounds yeah. good to me. Do we have a winner?
And how many cities there are named Fairview? Yes, we have a winner. And the winner is, don't we have any sound effects? Is this a top-notch radio show? We need, brrr, the winner is, brrr, drum roll, don't we? That's good enough. The winner is Andrea Duffy. And Andrea is from Roselle, Illinois. And since she got her postcard selected at random from the hundreds of thousands of correct answer, she will definitely win one of the following fabulous prizes. Dinner for two. At the Tasty in Harvard Square.
Mm.
Now, there is something for you.
Yes.
Dinner for two at my mother's house. She makes lasagna with the Rolaids baked right in.
Yes.
Or a Car Talk baseball hat. And Andrea, if I were you, I'd go for the hat.
Anyway, we'll have a brand new puzzler coming up, an automotive puzzler.
Oh,
during
yeah.
the second half of today. I'm going to stick to what I know. During the second half of today's show. So stick around for your chance, your big chance to win. In the meantime, let's take a call. 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello.
Yeah, sounds like a telegraph office. Who's this?
Sean.
Sean, Shawn.
That's right.
Where you from?
Portland, Oregon.
Portland,
sorry,
Oregon.
I'm canning ketchup, and I wasn't sure you were talking to me.
You're canning?
That's what it is.
That's what we hear. We hear the rumbling of the
now I'm gonna go
the mason jars
rumbling.
In the pot.
Pardon me?
We hear the rumbling of the
mason. Rumbling of jars in the pot.
Mason.
Boiling away?
Boiling ketchup.
Ketchup?
Uh-huh.
That's what you do with tomatoes?
That's what you're getting for Christmas. That's what everyone's getting for Christmas.
How do you make ketchup? You just take tomatoes and you grind them all up and you throw about 2 pounds of sugar in and that's
whole
it, right?
Sugar. Vinegar. Sugar, and then, you know, allspice and mace and things like that.
Mace?
It doesn't taste like Heinz.
Isn't that dangerous? What do you do? Spray it on someone when they attack you?
It doesn't taste like Heinz. I'm sure it doesn't because otherwise you wouldn't go through all the bother of making your own. So what else do you can and jar?
We can some cranberry chutney.
Oh.
And some hot Moroccan oil. It's so hot that you probably, I don't know if you like spicy things.
Oh.
It's very spicy.
I love hot things. My wife buys a little bottle of this stuff called Mongolian fire oil.
This is what this is like.
I tell you, man, you can take any kind of junk. My wife is the worst cook in creation, but you sprinkle 2 drops of Mongolian fire oil on it.
And give him a 6-pack of beer. And, he's happy.
And it's great.
Well, it sounds like you need that for Christmas, too.
Yeah, I'll take the Mongolian fire oil instead of the ketchup.
So anyway, Sean, what's up?
Well, I have an old Volvo, 74 Volvo sedan.
Wow.
200,000 miles.
Yeah.
And it vibrates. When you get up above about 50 miles an hour, it vibrates so much that you can't even hear another person in the car.
Wow.
And I took it to 2 mechanics, and the first one kind of tried to balance it, and that didn't help. And the second person said to call Car Talk. They seriously did. I was a little
What did they look
with
at?
Him and, pardon me?
What did they look at?
They put it up on the rack.
Yeah.
Technical term.
Yeah,
technical
term.
And they looked underneath, and they said, it looks fine.
So they didn't take any pieces off and study
anything?
Well,
I wasn't there.
You weren't there.
He said he put it up on the rack and looked at it, and so I don't know what he did, really.
Well, I mean, first of all, vibrations like that can be awfully dangerous.
It's very scary. I mean, I don't take it on the freeway anymore.
Yeah, because, I mean, when it's shaking like that, it means that something that's holding the wheels together is loose or ready to break.
Oh.
So, I mean, I would hope that they would have checked all 4 ball joints and all tie rods, tie rod ends.
Yeah, except there isn't any of that stuff.
Right.
My brother's an alarmist.
No, I know what it is. I mean, I just say you should check all of that thing, but I think it's not none of those things, too, as
but
a matter of fact.
It only happens when you accelerate.
Yes. What it is the center bearing on the drive shaft.
You've got it! That car has a split drive shaft.
2 pieces.
Yeah.
Huh.
And supporting the front piece of the drive shaft is a ball bearing, which is a rubber cage that goes around it. And it's probably all worn out. And what's actually happening is it's hitting the underside of the floor. Well, not the underside. Yeah, the underside.
Well, that's the other thing. The front seat, the floor on the front seat gets really hot. Like if you have your feet on the floor.
Well, that's nice in the winter.
I don't think they're related to each other.
No, they're unrelated.
They're not. Okay.
But I think it's probably the drive shaft that is making all this vibration.
So it's dangerous to drive.
Well,
it's
only dangerous in that it's eventually going to break because the drive shaft is going to tear loose from its moorings and it's going to rip that cage right off the frame.
And that's going to be exciting when it happens.
You'll hear a lot of noises, but right now you're getting a boom when you take off.
It's really, well, not so much when I first take off. It's when I get to a higher.
Yeah, well, you may also have a seized U joint, but there's no way they can just put it on the lift and look at things. In order to determine if you have a seized universal joint or a seized hanger bearing, they've got to take the drive shaft out. It takes about 10 minutes.
Right. This bearing in the middle that's holding up the center of the drive shaft is called a hanger bearing.
Or center bearing or whatever.
Hanger bearing.
So tell them to take a look at the hanger bearing, and if that looks okay, tell them to take out the drive shaft and check the universal joints.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And do it soon. And happy canning, Sean.
Okay.
You're going to send us each a jar of this homemade ketchup, or we're going to get one to share?
You can't get botulism or anything. You can't.
Right.
Have a nice holiday.
You too.
Bye-bye. Thanks for calling.
We'll be right back with more calls and the new puzzler right after these messages.
Hi, Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to try to answer your questions about cars, car repair, and the dangers of taking our advice.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. We have a little sad note here from Mary. Can you read that? What does it say? Helgerwold?
Yeah, Mary. Mary Helgerwold.
From where? What the heck does it say? It looks like Havineland, Iowa. I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
Midway. You can't go wrong with Midway.
Midway, Iowa.
Although Car Talk is my husband's favorite radio show, I wish to inform you that you have caused me undue expense and embarrassment. Oh, here we go again, right?
Not the first time.
Firstly, when my husband wanted your book, we had to drive 55 miles to a major bookstore to look for a copy. Since neither of the major chain bookstores had a copy, we had to special order it and wait 2 weeks to make another special trip to get it. So a total of 220 miles.
Yes.
Drive, right?
Yes.
That's not the problem.
No.
Secondly, here's the bad part.
The book.
I have taken your advice.
It's been the book.
No. I have taken your advice about driving the car immediately without a warm-up period. As people know, we have always recommended that you start the car and you drive.
Just get
in
and
drive. You don't have to sit there and warm it up. Just start it up and drive.
Right.
Mary says, unfortunately, the first time I did this, I failed to notice that although I had pushed the button, the garage door had not opened.
Oh, she drove away a little bit too fast.
So I backed right through it. The bottom two panels of the back of the garage door had to be replaced. How embarrassing. Signed, Mary something or other from somewhere.
Oh, how unfortunate.
I mean, we did say you just started up and drive, but you're supposed to, like, look. Come on,
well,
Mary.
Well, in her fervor.
We can't be blamed for that. No, I'm sick and tired of getting the blame for everything. Come on. We did our best. We assumed you were going to look, Mary.
And we assumed no responsibility.
That's right.
Anyway, it's time for the new puzzler.
Yeah.
I did promise an automotive puzzle.
I promised to stick
to what I knew best.
Stick to what you know best. And I hope you'll sort of keep it brief. We don't want one of these rambling
long-winded
stories.
Long-winded.
That goes on and on. It was a dark... I mean, all of your puzzles start out, it was a dark and stormy night. I mean, come on. We're not writing a novel here. This is just a simple little puzzle.
I like to paint the picture, you know? I like to get people involved
to
have that imagery. I mean, without the, you know...
You're right. The magic of radio. That's what radio is all about.
Sure, otherwise you'd do what?
Watch television. This way people can conjure up. You're right. I'm sorry. I apologize abjectly.
It's about time.
Whatever that means.
One of my guys at the garage bought himself a brand
Let's
new...
Let's conjure up an image of this guy at the garage. Knuckles are scraping on the ground. making grunting noises. Hair covering every inch of the body, including the
eyeballs. Except the top of the head.
Right. Okay, we conjured up that image. That's what I conjured up right away.
Anyway, he buys himself a brand new Snap-on nuclear-powered timing light. This is the new generation. In fact, I have one, too. It's a great timing light, I might add, even though it's overpriced by about $300. And built into this timing light is all kinds of nice stuff like advance and retard the timing, et cetera, et cetera. And a tachometer.
AM, FM radio.
CD player.
CD player. Right.
And it has
a fax modem.
In case you don't know the timing, they'll fax it to you.
Right.
And
you're gonna have all this stuff. This is the
you're the one who makes
century.
The puzzlers lengthy. By the way, I would have been done by now.
I'm sorry. I was conjuring up images.
Anyway, as I was about to say, it has this tachometer feature, and it's very simple the way it works. You hook it up to a spark plug wire, and whilst it's doing the timing for you, it counts how many pulses there are, and it knows how many times it occurs in a minute. And it figures that for every two revolutions of the crankshaft, the cylinder has to spark, right? And it tells you how fast the engine's going. Well, imagine his surprise when he hooks up his $300-plus timing light to some car, some GM car, and he hooks the thing up and he reads the engine RPM.
And it's wrong.
It's 1,900 RPM.
Mm.
And he says, this can't possibly be right. It's idling way too fast. Doesn't sound like it's idling that fast, but I guess it is. So he turns the idle down to 750, whereupon it won't run anymore. It stalls.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know. He says, that stupid timing light thing is broken. So he goes and he checks on another car, and he hooks up someone else's tachometer.
1,900 RPM.
And his tachometer and the other guy's tachometer both say the car is idling at 900.
Oh.
On another car.
On another car.
Okay.
Got it.
He comes back to this car. He turns the screw back to where it was. It says 1,900. The engine sounds okay, but 1,900? What's wrong? What's possible? What's going on here? Why is this thing saying 1,900?
When it obviously isn't running at 1,900. And what he didn't do, evidently, is use the other tachometer on this car.
Right.
That would have been an obvious thing to do. He didn't make that leap.
No, he didn't make that leap. But
we're lucky that he even figured out how to go to the other car. Yeah.
So the question is, what's going on here?
Sure, I know.
You do?
Of course.
Call him up, will you? He's still there.
He's still there. Gotta fix this.
If you think you know the answer.
You write it on the back of a $20 bill. What is the back of a $20 bill?
Send your answer to Puzzler Tower, Department of Potentially Correct Answers, or DPCA, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Midway. I mean, Office City.
Meh, 02238. I repeat, Puzzler Tower, DPCA, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our Fair City.
Meh, 02238. Anyway, if your answer is correct and we selected at random as our puzzler winner next week, you could win a fabulous prize. If you want to call us, the number is 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, yes, this is Tim from Henderson, North Carolina.
Hi,
Henderson,
Tim.
Henderson, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you today?
Well, not bad, not bad.
Good.
That's good.
What's on your mind, Tim?
Yes, I have a 1988 Nissan Sentra with 120,000 miles on it, and occasionally it embarrasses me.
Really?
More so than simply that it's a Nissan Sentra with that many miles.
Uh-huh. I mean, it is, as far as its performance goes?
Oh, it runs fine. It does wonderfully.
Oh, is it the aroma that embarrasses you?
It's the aroma that embarrasses me.
Yes, we call that AA. You need to join AA, aroma embarrassment. Yes.
Embarrassment is less than A? Embarrassment?
Aroma, I wasn't thinking of embarrassment. Aroma Anonymous.
Anonymous, that's it.
Well, I'm a pastor here in Henderson and often have folks riding in the car with me that either from the church or the conference, that sort of thing.
And they all say, Reverend, excuse me.
No one says anything. They're too polite.
They're too polite. Now, how do you tell the Reverend?
Amazingly, some of them do say something.
They really do.
If I try to blame it on the car, they sort of look at me like I've blamed it on the dog under the couch.
This aroma you get, I trust, is a familiar aroma.
Fairly familiar to most of us, yeah.
Yes, one that you might smell on a crowded elevator.
Right.
And does this happen?
Or a crowded church, for that matter.
Are there any particular circumstances under which this happens, or is it apt to happen at random?
Well, I've accused the car of only doing it at the most inopportune circumstances, but
yeah.
I tend to notice it more when I've just come to a recent stop and idling at a stoplight, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, the aroma you're getting is hydrogen sulfide coming from the catalytic converter, and there may not be any remedy. Has the car done this for a long time?
Only for the last 60,000 miles or so.
Is that all?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there may be no remedy. You can try different brands of gasoline.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you've tried that already. Sometimes that works. Obviously, a gasoline that has less sulfur in it than another would tend to ameliorate the situation. On the other hand, there may be no remedy except for replacing the catalytic converter. And I assumed you've had the engine tuned up in the last 60,000 miles or so, it runs well. And aside from the aroma, it runs great.
Runs fine, yeah, no complaints about it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess with everything in life, you got the choice of trying to fix it or trying to cover it up.
Have you tried like those Pine Sol air fresheners? I mean, those are real cheap. You can get those.
But you need 100 of those. What do you do, hang them underneath the car around the catalytic converter?
Well, you need to kind of draw them like a sword. I mean, as soon as the aroma comes out, you need to bring these into play.
So you're proposing the cover it up technique.
I think so.
Cover it up.
I think the answer is to try switching brands of gasoline.
Okay.
And if and when you try, I mean, you've got to stick with one brand for several weeks to see if it really works. Mm-hmm. And if you find a brand that works, great. If you find one that when you find that none of this helps, I think what you have to do is resort to replacing the catalytic converter, which is probably all used up by now anyway.
Yeah, and that's part of the reason that you're getting this odor, because the catalysts are worn out. And it's going
to
cost you a few bucks to replace it.
A few hundred.
Yeah, what you might want to do if you want to be cheap about it. But maybe the parishioners will just chip in, given the problem.
Yeah, you could have a special collection.
For
just this. I think it might go over well.
And if they won't, I'll just invite them to ride with me.
Right, you can call it the Catholic Converter Collection. See you, Reverend.
Bye-bye.
Right. Well, you've done it again. You've wasted another valuable hour listening to Car Talk. Our producer is Doug Punkinlips Berman. He kind of likes that now. He puts it in every week. Figures
it's hopeless. He can't get rid of
it.
Wait, didn't we have another name for him, though? Doug?
Curly.
Curly. Doug Curly, Punkinlips.
Lavoisier,
Sock Dugas.
Yeah.
Berman.
Let's not leave
anything out.
He's almost getting as many as the next
He's working his way up there.
Our associate producer and dean of the College of Auto Musicology is Ken Wears Barbie Rogers. Our engineer and assistant producer is Jennifer Bikini Wax Loeb.
Why would you want to wax your bikini? Anyway? What are you sliding down a big slide?
I guess
something?
So. I don't understand. She must do something for her.
Wax?
I don't know.
The back, the front, the top, the bottom? I don't get it. It's like waxing skis.
Something like that. Our technical advisor is the patron saint of free lunch, John Bugsy Sebastian. Gotta take a breath here. Mr. Height, Sweet Cheeks, Twinkle Toast, Donut Breath, make that 2 triple cheeseburgers, Bikini Wax Lawler.
Oh, he goes with it now?
I guess so. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research. Our automotive medical researcher is Dr. Denton Fender. Our secretary of pain relief is no longer Les Aspirin. Aspirin resigned, citing personal reasons. I guess that job was giving him a headache. Anyway, our director of unsolicited advice is H. Ross Peugeot. Notice I had his with the French accent, Peugeot. Our fleet manager is Oscar De La Rental. Our assertiveness training coach is Lois Deem. Our staff dietitian is Arlene Menu. The keeper of the bell tower is...
Yes, master.
Quasi Automotive.
Yes, master.
Our staff disciplinarian is Les Stern. Our staff geneticist is Dr. Gene Poole. Director of long-range strategic planning here at Car Talk Plaza is Kay Sarah, who's married to Frank Sarah, and now the IRS knows her as Kay Sarah Sarah. She had help this week from Sarah Andipity.
Oh, that's how she gets all her ideas.
Yes, and the chairman of our math department is Horatio Algebra. Mr. Gigi does our hair. The president of the Car Talk Hair Club for Men is Emerson Fittibaldi, who, by the way, is also a client. And, of course, our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known around Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey.
Oh, that bum.
We're Click and Clack, the Tappan Brothers. Thanks for listening, and don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
See you next week. Bye-bye. Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though it's hard to believe at the moment, this is NPR, National Public Radio.